Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Joining me today is Fran Mirabella.
Hey, Guardians.
And some folks from Bungie, Deej and John. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing great.
Good.
It's good to see you. So, John, we haven't had you on the show before. Why don't you tell people a little bit about what you do?
I'm a gameplay designer, so I work on the Sandbox team, and I'm primarily in charge of weapons. So
got it.
Mostly work on weapons.
Not a small job.
No. Yeah, there's lots of guns in Destiny.
So you're a legendary designer over there. Nobody? No.
So the weapons really haven't changed much in Destiny 2, you know? They're basically the same.
Yeah, it was basically like Control-C, Control-V.
That's it, right?
Let's go to E3 and talk to Dustin. So.
In all seriousness, though, you actually drastically revamped the weapon system in Destiny 2.
Yeah.
Your sniper's in heavy, your rocket launcher's in the heavy slot, or... what's it called now?
Power weapons.
They're power weapons.
Called power weapons.
You sort of blew it up.
Yeah. There's a reason we actually changed that terminology, and it's a tough one to stick because a lot of people still just refer to it as heavy, like, oh, get the heavy, or like heavy ammo's up or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like that we chose that word pretty carefully. A power weapon is like we're trying to create like an experience, like a power moment, right? And a heavy weapon actually implies some weight, and it implies some size and girth, which I think, you know, the rocket launcher machine gun from Destiny 1, they totally fill that role, right? And we actually slow you down when you have that weapon out a little bit. So it feels heavy. It feels significant. And that's not the case with a power weapon. Like, a power weapon is all about just having a potent power experience, right?
So, like the fusion rifle,
right,
a little smaller.
Yeah, fusion rifle. Like, you're still light on your feet when you have a fusion rifle, and it's all about, you know, charging up and using it at the right time. You know, shotgun is all about, like, getting in close and doing some tight maneuvering. So we don't want that to... we don't want to imply that it's going to be slow and heavy. Like, it's got to be powerful, right? So, power weapon.
Definitely.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, no.
Deej, what has the community reception been like to the weapon changes?
Well, I think any time you introduce change into something that people love, there's a certain amount of skepticism.
Anxiety
balanced by hopeful optimism. I hope it's cool, but if it's not, I'm going to be mad. And, you know, there's certain ways I like to play Destiny. It's always that interesting push-pull between I want you to surprise me, but I don't want you to upset, you know, any of my habits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that we really feel makes Destiny a sequel. You know, what is Mark Noseworthy said? We're breaking some bones. You know, we're reaching into the sandbox that people have really become intimately acquainted with, and we've said we've got some different ideas, and we're going to do some different things. I think the community reaction to anything until they've actually played it is purely speculative. But I think a lot of people came out of the gameplay reveal event that we had earlier in the month pretty happy. You know, some of our toughest customers, some of our staunchest and most vocal critics, you know, guys like Triple Rec, you know, like I didn't get to talk to him much, but I made eye contact at one point, and I was like,
and he was like,
and he went, So that's good. I mean, that's a good basis upon which to build. At E3, we're welcoming thousands of people to come into the three booths where you can find us to play that game.
And you make eye contact with
every single one of them. I just sit there at the end of the line, and I'm just like, and as they come out, I'm like...
If you get a nod or...
Yeah, no. But that's kind of... That's kind of how we're opening the aperture, if you will, to kind of give everybody a good vision as to what this is. Is we had hundreds of people at the gameplay reveal. We'll have thousands of people at E3. And then the beta is where, hopefully, we are joined by millions of people who will get their hands on this new game, experience that new action, and help us test the things that we're going to be doing to bring everybody together on the day of launch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Heavy was pretty sparse in Destiny 1 and... throughout the years. So what I've been thinking about a lot and been asked a lot, especially in PvE, are the drops any different? In other words, maybe a better question is it more of a primary energy type gameplay focus? Because I remember going through some raids and moments where, like, the sniper, especially, you are really just relying on it. Not as much rockets, but, like, losing a sniper, I think people are thinking about, is it more weighted towards being a primary game?
Yes and no. So we're actually, this is something that we're still working on right now with the sort of the final moments we have before test and production, like, physically lock us out of making changes.
Yeah.
Actually handcuff our hands to the arms of our chairs. That's really awkward. That's one of the things that we're very finely tuning with the time that we have left is ammo availability for the power weapon slot in all game modes. We were worried that there's going to be a lot of skepticism, and I did see some out there that, like, this is a change that is only focused on the PvP game, and that's absolutely not true.
Yeah.
It's about, like, again, what I was saying earlier, it's about having a potent power experience, and you can have that in PvE or PvP, right? That's the time where, like, you know, following your sniper example, like, it's critical to have a sniper in a raid, and we know that, and there's going to be a moment where the sniper steps up and says, okay, I'm using my power ammo, right? And it's going to play a little bit like heavy ammo, but it's not going to be as sparse. We're still fine-tuning exactly how available it's going to be, and we're also hopefully working on some mechanics that are more, like, you know, ground into the combat game of, like, if you see this type of enemy and you take them out, you know they're going to drop a purple brick for you. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be an element of that as well.
Are you expecting players to sort of play different roles more because of it? It sounded like you were getting at that. Like, oh,
yeah.
I genuinely hope so. I'm the rocket.
Yeah, I genuinely hope so. I think it's one of the things I love about you have all these different archetypes that are going to sit in the power weapon slot, and you can only have one gun equipped at a time. So, it you know, players, they get to make this awesome choice about, like, what is my emotional identity when I pull out one of these weapons. Like, who do I want to be? Do I want to be the guy who, like, rushes down and shotguns everything? Like, do I want to be the party's demolition guy, right? Like, who's got the rockets? And then, you know, I think some people are going to make a really, like, immediate decision about what they want, right? And then they're going to be the person in their fire team who's like, okay, I'm running snipes. And that's going to open up other questions for the other people who are raiding with them. And it's like, okay, who's got shotgun? Who's got fusion? You know, who's doing grenade launcher, right? So, yeah, I really hope it goes there. Yeah.
Let's talk inventory and drops. Now, we see a lot of the ammunition dropping in the real world right now, but we're not seeing any engrams or anything. Has that changed?
I don't know. I'm actually... So that's more of the investment team. Mm-hmm. And all I can say is that they've been working just as hard as we have to make the game as awesome as possible for the investment stream. So...
Got it.
It's also a subject of fine-tuning right up until the moment where they say, you're done. No one's checking any more changes in. That's the game you're shipping. I mean, they will tinker with that. They will iterate on that until the last possible moment. And that's not one of the things that we're really opening up to conversation probably until the game launches. That's not something that people should expect to engage with here at E3. That's not something that I think you should expect to engage with during the beta. I remember last time we did all of this, back in 2014, we had the alpha here at E3. People were exploring all of old Russia. Mm-hmm. So that by the time they got to the launch game, they thought, well, I mean, I've done everything there is to do on the first destination, and I've already explored the second destination. So you had to get halfway through the game before you even saw new real estate. Yeah. We're keeping our cards a little bit closer to the vest this time, not out of the interest of deception or a lack of faith in our ability to do something cool, but because the way you discover these things, the way you unlock your potential, the way you upgrade your character, these are all fun moments of discovery in Destiny. Your first engram should be a happy moment. You know, the way you decrypt those things and the way it adds to your character is part of your journey as a player, especially after you've been busted down, not even to private, but you've been busted down to some person that used to be a guardian and is now limping out into the wild wondering what will happen to me now. And because people know what Destiny is, because we used to tell people, well, there'll be these public events and there'll be a game that you play with other people. And they'll say, well, how does that work? I don't understand what you're talking about. So finally we just said, okay, everybody gets to play the alpha. Here we are at E3. Everybody just go play the game. Everybody jump into some public events. And then by the end of the beta, we had people who had a vault full of, like, engrams and blue guns that they liked. You know, and it's like, do I get to keep my Shinjin E when the game comes out? And we're like, you're not gonna want that Shinjin E after you get your first legendary. But these things felt very real in the minds of players. And with this beta, what we want to do is really give people an opportunity to enjoy the action and give us an opportunity to test our machines behind the curtain.
So one thing a lot of players do want is Rumble. Now, you've said all your games are 4v, game modes are 4v4 and Crucible. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for the Rumble experience?
It means it's going away.
It's just gone?
For now, Rumble is gone.
Oh,
the Crucible is unified as a 4v4 engagement. Mm-hmm. Somebody says, I'm a solo player. It's like, you will make a fine addition to any team through matchmaking. Destiny is, in many respects, a cooperative experience. We want the Crucible to be where teams of players come together to fight together and to figure out how they can complement each other's play styles. And, you know, the alpha testing at home has been a ton of fun so far.
Yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. We can help out. I mean, if you guys need anyone, we know people.
We absolutely need you guys in the beta. So, and I know you'll be there.
We'll see. Every one that you release.
You're a tough customer.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk about it offline.
Yeah. Related to that, actually, part of that conversation has been that it's the speculation from the community. Oh, well, they're just listening to Triple Rec and the competitive players. So 4v4 is going to be intense. How would you respond to that? The difficulty is increasing, perhaps, because it's closer to Trials.
I would say that there was a lot of talk at the gameplay reveal event about how the 4v4 shift makes the game more competitive, and a lot of people were saying, oh, well, are you going to be an eSport now? And it's like, really, our focus on Destiny, and anybody who has played the game really understands this, our game is on social gameplay. So while 4v4 puts more of an emphasis on every single player, I think the more we talk about this and the more we take a look at what our goals really are for the Crucible, the learnability of those encounters is really what is at the heart of this. The ability to say, Crucible is full of chaos, it's full of combat, it's full of explosions, you're getting outflanked from every direction. But if it's 4v4, you have a better opportunity to really understand why you lost. Even with the new Crucible heads-up display, you can see, you know, like, oh, we got all Hunters on the other side, and two of them have their supers ready, so let's play differently. One of them just picked up heavy ammo, so let's batten down the hatches and let's fight them close quarters. You know, we're giving people the information they need to make better choices about combat. I mean, you're in playtest more often than I am. You're up in...
Every day.
Every single day.
Every day.
So, I mean, what have your experiences been in terms of taking it to 4v4, and how would you describe it as being different?
Yeah, it's definitely different. I think it definitely affects the pacing of a PvP match. So there's less just chaos happening all over the place. And
it seems slower when I played it.
It is slower, yeah. And part of that too is the move to power weapons too, right? So nobody has ready access to this like one hit kill monster at all times, right? So yeah, it definitely plays a little bit slower. And then I think one of the best changes about it is because there's less people spawning in, dying all over the place. Mm-hmm. There are less of those moments where, you know, your team is working together and you're setting up on a point and all of a sudden you just get shot in the back of the head by some guy who spawned over there and flanked your team. I mean, that still happens. It's still totally possible to make a flanking play in the game. But it's the game is just way more, like, predictable and understandable and learnable now. So pacing is definitely, like, it's good. It's nice.
Yeah.
And before we move on, I want to bring this all the way back home to the original root of your question. Certainly we listen to influential people in our community with large audiences. A lot of times they're speaking to us on behalf of their constituents, if you will. So certainly we listen to Triple Rec. We listen to, poor Triple Rec is really being picked on in this show.
I know.
Datto. Destin. We listen to Destin.
Yeah, we listen to Destin. We listen to Datto. We listen to Fran. We listen to everyone. We listen to everyone. If you're talking to us on the feedback forum, if you're engaging us on Twitter, we listen to every single player. And for a player who's sitting there thinking to themselves, oh, great, well, I'm not spending all of my time talking to these guys about my opinions, which means I don't have a voice in the game, you can see data for every single player. He can see where you're spending your time in the game. He can see what your favorite mission is, what your favorite weapons have been. Every single player who picks up a gun and fires a single shot in the world of our game has a voice in terms of the player data. So while there is always a very vocal contingent of our community that gives us interesting ideas and confirms a lot of our theories, there is a balance between the influential streamer or YouTuber and the things that we can understand about the entire community based on which weapons are equipped most frequently or what are the ratios of shotgun usage to fusion rifle usage. I mean, these are the things that, you know, John and his team agonize over.
Yes.
Does every weapon in this sandbox have a logical application at some point during the player experience?
Yeah.
What were some of the challenges you found getting all the consoles to 4K?
Well, are you a graphics engineer?
I'm not a graphics engineer, nor a programmer.
I'm not a graphics engineer either. It's not really the
best. All my stuff just worked.
It's not, it's not the best question for us. And really, we've confirmed 4K for PlayStation 4 Pro. Have not made any promises about Scorpio as of yet. It's a very recent development. They just announced 2 days ago. So we are working behind the scenes to see what its future holds for us. And these are announcements that we'll make at some point in time. But I didn't want to let any assumptions or presumptions go unchecked.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
And then PC, of course, totally on cap.
Here at E3, it is it's 4K, 60 frames per second. I've heard that the PC build will be uncapped. We haven't talked a lot about specs. We haven't talked about exactly what you'll need to build in order to enjoy it at its fullest potential.
Yeah. Loop mentioned it again today on an interview, so there's that.
Yeah.
So it seems that, but we get it. It's an unfinished product, of course.
It is. It is indeed. And, everything we say about the PC build until October 24th is us talking about something that is sort of growing in its grip right now.
And can you confirm that it is 30 frames per second on all the consoles?
Yes. All of the console versions of Destiny will be 30 frames per second.
Okay, got it.
I did want to go back to just finishing off the Crucible conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to the host. But you had mentioned it was a little slower. I just wanted to confirm, Time to Kill is a little longer, right?
Yes, correct.
That's correct. That was an intentional choice.
That is an intentional choice, yeah, absolutely. But it's not necessarily like longer in a DPS way. I mean, we are still fine-tuning the damage in the DPS, like how many hand cannon headshots it'll take to kill a guy.
Three shots.
But it's more of a net result of a bunch of little changes that the PvP team has made, the sandbox team has made. There's just a whole bunch of little things that all work together to just sort of like slow down the pace of the game a little bit.
I really enjoyed that. And then radar has come up a ton, and I don't know if you've talked about it. How far does the radar sort of extend? That's been a big conversation that you can see too far in Destiny as it is today. Has that been tuned?
Yes, we have clamped that. It's not going to do the thing. In Destiny 1, it does the thing where if you don't see anyone, if nobody pings your radar, then and you can't find anyone to fight, you can't find the fight. We would then say, okay, increase the distance. And it was all meant to help players be able to find combat, right? Because you never know what's going to happen with a spawning system in a dynamic game like that. And you would occasionally have players like spawn in and be like, okay, I think I need to go that way. And they run that way. And the combat is flowing this way around the map. And then you then never find anybody, right?
Yeah.
Like it can be frustrating.
Yeah.
And that's why we made that change, right? But then, yeah, absolutely, it had some ramifications to flanking and strategy. And so, yeah, we've clamped that down a little bit. And then, one of the things we've been talking about over at the booth at the show is that we're tying our maps to our modes a lot closer now. So the maps are being made with a specific mode in mind. And so that's allowed us to, like, shrink the size a little bit. So now we can actually say, like, well, if combat is happening over here, we can basically tune the environment in a way so that There are viable flanking routes, and you have opportunities for strategy there.
Okay. So. And then the last question on that was, does movement, speed of movement, or sound impact it? Because I know you guys tune the sound of footsteps. Does it impact the radar? Like, can you sort of quietly get into radar?
Yes. we do that. Like, we do the thing that we do in Destiny 1 where when you crouch, you go off radar for a little bit, and then you pulse, and then you're off, and then you pulse. And that's just to basically, like, say, like, yeah, you can be stealthy, but we don't want you just hiding in a corner for an entire match. That's not fun for anybody.
Right. And yeah, all I meant by that was, like, can you walk slow?
It's fun for the guy that hides
now?
In the corner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Walk slow? No.
Yeah, I mean, when you crouch, you're off.
If you're standing, you are in combat. Okay. You will show up on radar. If you're crouching, you will pulse. We slowed it down a little bit, though, so that you have more time stealthed now in D2.
So when I play Crucible, the combat always founds me. One way I want to go find combat is in Lost Sectors and the new exploration of the planets. How is that going to work? Are we going to be able to see those on our map and go to them? Are they going to be kind of dynamic?
Do you know?
Yeah, you'll see them on your map. It's really the characters that you meet in the world. They'll put them on your map.
Oh, okay.
So the map will unlock and unfold in front of you as your adventure progresses. When you first touch down in a brand new destination, you may see one thing on your map. But as you start completing those missions, as you start completing those adventures, the characters that you interact with that give you your marching orders, that equip you with your rewards, there's sort of this progressive now go do this relationship that you have with those NPCs. And eventually you pull up your map and you've got all these new things that you'll be able to do. The whole goal is to keep you in the world of the game, and the game being this dynamic experience that develops as you play it. Yeah.
And how are you encouraging exploration beyond the main quest line?
Beautiful art, bad guys that are fun to shoot, sparrows that are fun to drive, those sorts of things. Yeah, I mean, we're giving you more things to do in the world. We've talked about the adventures, we've talked about the lost sectors, we've talked about the quests, we've talked about the story missions. So we're going to fill that world up with action. We're going to fill that world up with fun things to do. Exploration is really a matter of, I want to move around and I want to do whatever I want to do. I want to go wherever I want to go. One of my favorite ways to play Destiny is sometimes to just sort of take away any of the urgency, to take away any of the need for tactical chatter, and to catch up with a friend of mine and just get on our sparrows and motor through the world. And it's like, oh, this looks like something fun to shoot. Let's jump off and engage these enemies. Let's mop up. Oh, here's a public event. Let's rocket off to that public event. It's right on our map. It starts in 1 minute. We can get there in time. Let's see who's there. I love arriving at a public event, especially after we've had like a content launch.
Yeah.
And seeing if I can arrive there with somebody who has like a really low light score and be that guy where their back is up against the wall and they're fighting an enemy and this sparrow comes over the bluff and some dude leaps off and Nova bombs this thing that's giving him a huge, a hassle and then just like, and then I'm back aboard my sparrow and I rocket out of the bubble, just leaving that guy standing there like,
who was that guy?
Who was that? What was that? Was awesome. I want to be that good someday, and that's one of the great things about Destiny is when you first join that community and when you first start playing that game, there's always someone you can look at and say, I want to be that awesome someday.
Only with you, Deej, is you pull up on your sparrow and then you trip as you get off.
I trip as I get off and I
then
fall.
Then you self-res.
My head. Self-res. Yeah, that's great. This I'll moment of humility out, is brought to you by IGN Fireteam Chat.
You guys always have had different difficulties with strikes and stuff like that, but with the campaign seems to be more of the, you go through the campaign a lot, that's a thing. Are you going to have different difficulties out of the gate for the campaign? Some games have that approach. You come right out the gate, you can go extremely hard.
My understanding of the campaign, it is this linear experience. Very few things in Destiny are linear. But one of the things we want to do with campaign, with the redesigned director, is you always know what's the next thing you should do. You always know, like, which story mission should I play next? That one. And that campaign leads you through the progression of your character. Because the whole theme of Destiny is that you start from nothing. Well, you start being awesome, And then you get Gary brought to nothing, and then Gaul shows up. I said, this Gary stuff has to stop.
It does. It's confused.
It's got to stop. Well, nobody's going to be confused when they have this big, beautiful guardian, and that superhero is stripped of all the weapons and all the powers and everything that makes them badass. And if you think you're going to be walking around as you limp out of the city going, oh, we showed Gary, didn't we? It's like, he's Gaul. He is Dominus Gaul, and he's the baddest enemy that we've ever set in your path. And if you don't learn some respect, you're going to be taught respect.
Yeah, right.
He's going to teach you. But anyway, enough joking around with that.
So, like, difficulty-wise, though, I was wondering if we could expect, like, is it a light-level structure that it's you wait to get higher light level? Meaning
yeah.
Other games with campaigns, you can just, like Halo, you know, you can just choose a harder difficulty.
Or right. Destiny right now with Raids, you can put it on hard versus...
You can, normal. right. But when you first start playing Destiny 2, the idea is that you are reduced to rubble. You and everything you've been sworn to protect is reduced to rubble. And the story campaign is how you kind of take your character back up to the heights that it needs to be at so that you can launch a counteroffensive and reclaim our home. So it's about loss and recovery.
Awesome.
So you're working on the arsenal. How do I find those new weapons that are going to be the most coveted items in the game?
I mean, so they're all going to be available through the loot stream, like like in Destiny 1. There's been some changes to the how the vendors work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think predominantly you're going to be looking to engrams that drop, and then leveling up reputation with different vendors to get packages to find weapons.
Like faction vendors?
The factions are not gone. I'm not sure what the latest plan is for the faction vendors.
Then say
right
nothing.
So, and that's where I'll leave that. But yes, there's. The faction vendors are there, and there will be a set of Dead Orbit weapons, a set of New Monarchy weapons, a set of Future Warp weapons.
Specifically, with exotic weapons, in Destiny 1, you guys started this really great trend of having really fleshed out story missions for some of the exotics, like the Galahorn here, too, and such.
Mm-hmm.
Can we expect that sort of experience with the sequel?
Yes. There will be some of those.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how I'm going to get my sidearm. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. Sunless?
The Sunshot?
Sunshot.
Yes, Sunshot.
Yeah. Everybody
Sunshot.
Says New Fatebringer. Yeah. I'm like, let's call it the Sunshot.
That's a hand cannon, to be clear. Hand cannon sidearm.
So
yeah. Big difference there.
Nice. There will be a story experience for that unlock.
Probably not that weapon, but yeah, there are a handful of weapons that are going to get a quest.
Awesome. So some are drops, some have a quest. That's really good information to know.
Yeah.
And the Destiny 1 story experience wasn't altogether rewarding from a drop perspective, right? Like, there were certain people that went all the way through the Destiny 1 story
experience. Here's your Stranger's Rifle.
Here's your Stranger's Rifle. There were plenty of people that churned out of Destiny without ever earning or equipping an exotic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to let that happen again. Not to make any specific promises about when you'll get your first exotic or what that experience will be like, but we are very aware of the fact that some of the best moments in Destiny, earning your first exotic, finishing your first raid, were things that were enjoyed by a small minority of the overall player base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Luke Smith at the gameplay premiere talked about the fact that of all the players that reached the level 20 rank cap and then leveled up enough to even qualify for a raid, half of them were able to form up a fire team and complete that raid. Now, with some of the original design for the raids, they were saying this is the activity for the hardest of the hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that number was 50%, that's you guys. We made the raids for you guys.
Yeah.
But there might be some people out there in your audience who are like, that's not me, and correct, Deej, I never finished a raid.
Mm-hmm.
While more people finished raids than we ever anticipated, we also have really come to think that while so many people feel like raids are some of the best content in the game, the onus is on us to expose that content to more people, which is why the guided games and which is why the better connective tissue, you know, this isn't to say that we're making raids easy so everyone can play them. No, sir. It's still going to be like getting hit in the head with a phone book in a dark room. But we're going to let more people enjoy getting hit in the head by that phone book in that dark room.
They're
going to
love it.
You're going to love it. I'm selling it so hard right now.
Put that on the marketing.
Yeah.
What are some of the experiences internally you've found with adjusting the weapons? Like, you go in, I know you guys have a room where you test multiplayer endlessly.
Yeah.
What's been some of the the weapons that you've had to adjust to bring them into balance? And what has been, like, just a really fun moment?
So, I mean, yeah, most of the exotics started really, they start strong, right? Because that's sort of like part of the design strategy is just like, okay, turn it up to like 15 or 16 and then get it in a playtest and see how loud people yell. And then sometimes, like, I make a bad bet and I'm like, this is way too strong, this is going to be crazy, and nobody cares. And they're like, this is great, this is fun, like totally playable, and like, this doesn't feel overpowered at all. I was like, oh, okay, all right. And then some, yeah, most of the time, like the first couple of times people get their hands on an exotic or like a new weapon archetype or something, they're just like, no, we will, please tell me we're not shipping this. Like this is going to ruin everything, right? So yeah, we try and start hot and then like bring it down a little bit until you just sign a good faith too from the studio too. It's like, oh okay, they're not going to try and break the game. a great experience during weapon development. I might need a minute.
That's all right. Teach, what about you through development? What's been one of your most rewarding experiences internally with the team?
You know, I actually, and I said this to John before we came down here, it's very difficult for me to participate with the team throughout development. Because if I fall in love with a certain feature and I find myself in an environment like this, you know, talking about how much I love a certain feature, how much I love a certain moment, and then they might be like, you're not up on current events, buddy. That's completely changed. Not gone, but like it could completely change. Mm-hmm. So I will admit to you that I come late into development. So my best moment, I think so far in development, happened in the alpha on my couch a week ago. So I'm like, okay, we're going down to E3. I'm going to play some Countdown. I didn't get to play a lot of Countdown, obviously, at the gameplay premiere or even prior. So I sat down on my couch, formed up a dream team. I got me, I got Cosmo, I got Elliot Gray, who makes all of our blog art, and I got Lars from the Crucible team. So we go through and, you know, the people in this alpha are people that we work with, you know, some of our favorite partners. We are playing in this alpha. We go undefeated for 2 hours, and I'm playing well. I'm feeling mean. I'm feeling smart, most importantly. There are a lot of Crucible matches where I haven't even had the opportunity to feel smart. You're playing Control, stand here, and try to unlock B, and it's like, yep, there's the Voidwalker, here we go, we're all going to die, right? But when we're playing Countdown, we can start, and I can say, okay, guys, you go over to this objective. I'm going to go to this objective, but I'm going to go loud. And so I'm going, and I'm throwing grenades, and I'm shooting my guns, and I'm flying up in the air, making myself an obvious target. Everybody comes over to fight me. Meanwhile, they all swing around. They arm the other objective, and by the time they know what's going on, my three teammates are dug in. They're now moving over to confront them at that Countdown that has begun, and it's too late because those guys are on their game and they're ready to go. So I got to feel like a valuable member of a team. I got to feel like I turned the tide of battle by literally being like, hi, shiny object, you know. And
you're like Kevin Costner in Dances with Wolves.
I'm just like Kevin Costner. Conversely, like, me and Lars would break up as one team, and then Cosmo and Elliot would break up as another team. You know, and Lars and I are talking to each other. It's like, okay, I'll take farthest right flank. They're going to hop over the boat. They're going to come up this ramp. I'm going to be ready for them. Lars would say, Deej, take power ammo. You know, like, we're coordinating with each other. You know, Cosmo and Elliot are doing the same thing. They're like, we're getting hit hard over here, guys. Come over and help. You know, and then Lars would swing over, and I'm like, just in case they're using the same, so, you know, like, you know, feint, parry, and riposte, you know, strategy that we used on them. I'm going to stay over here. You know, like, no, Deej, we're actually getting hit really hard. Come on over. You know, and I can come over. And because I'm late to the game, I'm out flanking people. I'm sneaking in behind them. You know, I'm like melee, you know, shotgun attack because I pulled the power ammo. I mean, I just feel like the Crucible is a place where moments that you choose can happen. Whereas before, I just felt like, you know, it always just came straight at me like a hairdryer aimed at your face, you know. And I didn't really understand what happened. You know, I got vaporized and my embers were carried away with some beautiful particle effects, but I couldn't tell you what happened. You know, and now with this new Crucible in the Alpha, I feel like I have good stories that come out of the Crucible that I can tell that I understand.
That's cool. That's awesome.
And there may be competitive people, you know, out there in the community, you know, the loomies of the world might be like, dude, you're such an idiot. I have tons of good stories from the Crucible. But I feel like this new Crucible caters to me as a player. You know, like understanding those binary objectives, understanding ways to, you know, sort of commit the enemy in different ways and flank them in ways that they might not be expecting. Some of my best Crucible matches in the game of Destiny have happened in the Destiny 2 Alpha playing this new mode.
Very cool.
What about you?
So I got two.
I talked a long time.
Yeah.
Letting them think.
I'll try and be quick. So one of them was one of the first like take home builds we did of the game.
Yeah.
Where there was this big push internally to get a whole bunch of our stuff in the game so we could like evaluate it, like a first dry run of like, this is what it's going to feel like playing through the game, starting a new character, going through all the leveling stuff, and then trying to hit end game, which is hard to do. You know, I mean, like, you guys have played Destiny. Like, it takes a while. It takes a serious time commitment. So it was a build that was going to sit at home for a while with the studio, and we were just like, we would all try and play it as much as we possibly could and see how far we could get. So I'm playing and starting a new character, and I'm going through the campaign, and, you know, I'm just experiencing, like, the leveling game of, like, okay, and, like, and me and Greg, the other weapons designer, had gotten almost all of our guns in the game. Like, we worked really hard to get all the stuff in there to be really representative. And so we're leveling, and we're getting, you know, white guns, green guns, blue guns, and light levels going up, and it's good, and it's playing well. It's like, okay. And then there's a moment where I got my first exotic.
Oh. Right?
And it was Sunshot, the hand cannon that we have. And I was still, I'm still at the point where like Deej said, we're trying to get these things into players' hands earlier. Mm-hmm. So I'm still in the leveling game. I'm still looking at blues and you know, weapons like that right now. And then, okay, so I have my first exotic. Okay, awesome. I have Sunshot. And so I launch into the next mission in the campaign, and I start using it, and I was just like, oh my God, it's good. Like, it's good. It's so good. And like, Sunshot, part of its exotic behavior is everything you kill explodes. Mm-hmm. And that explosion can kill other things. So you can like popcorn. Like, so if you have like a bunch of ads and you get a headshot, it'll be like, like that. It's like, it's awesome when you get it to work. It's just this moment of like, I'm playing the game in a very analytical way, looking at my work, trying to feel out different combinations of weapons, and then I get like one of the things that's supposed to be fun, and I get it, and I'm like, oh, I don't care about my work stuff anymore. I was like, oh, it's so good. Like, and I'm getting like, you know, weapons dropping at a higher light level, and I was like, don't care. I'm just gonna use this for a long time. And that was like, that was really awesome and validating. The other thing is a little bit higher level. It's not really a specific moment, but so I was on the Bungie podcast a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we have a really healthy culture at work of criticism and internal critiques. Mm-hmm. And this is something that Luke and Mark were talking about, where like the new weapon system, power weapons, energy kinetic, was a tough sell. Like it was a bet that the Sandbox team made at work, and there was a fair amount of healthy internal skepticism from people like Luke Smith, the effing creative director of the project. And you know, and that's a tough spot to be in, right? And sometimes when you're in that situation, the thing that you believe in doesn't make it, right? And it's, you know, it's rarely, it never feels good, but it's really like mean, right? Like they're not being mean about it, but you know, we're just not aligned on a thing, and it doesn't come out. But so that's one that, you know, we tried to take that hill, and we took the hill. And I remember over the period of a couple months, like as the content was coming together, you know, the audio was coming in, the effects were coming in, like the artists were like doing like final passes on the guns, and like people are playing it, and you know, we have these take home builds, and random people are coming up to me telling me stories about the things that they were doing in the game. And then like, you know, Luke is coming out of playtest being like, oh my God, I had this combination of these perks, and it was awesome. And just like this like slow validation of this thing that, you know, had some skepticism and that like I believed in, but also like I was plagued with self-doubt the whole time, right? It's just like, is this going to work? Like, I think it's going to be good, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then like seeing it come together and then organically having people just like love it was just like, was huge. Like, it was awesome. So yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Great stories.
Yeah.
This is where we are as creators. We have an established world that is inhabited by a deeply passionate community. So we want to make a sequel. We're going to put a 2 on the box. comedy size 2.
Yeah.
So we need to go in and we need to do new things that will surprise them. We need to do things that will challenge them in some new and exciting ways. But even when the developers are saying to the designers, you're breaking too much. You're stretching this too far.
Yeah,
you're asking the sandbox meta to have way too much elasticity. You know, we are in a world where we're traveling this road in telling these new Destiny stories, and on one cliff is more of the same, and on the other cliff is this doesn't feel like a Destiny game anymore. And I think a lot of us feel like we're in a good place where we're telling a new story in 4 new worlds You know, there's still beautiful places to explore. The guns are still fun to shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doubling down on story in some new and exciting ways. So we feel pretty good about the fact that Destiny is a sequel. We're taking some chances. You know, we're placing some bets with where the community's willing to follow us. But at the same time, we're delivering on the things that they've always said. The worlds of Destiny are beautiful places I love to explore. The game is fun to play. I feel like a badass. My warlock is a superhero. The guns are super fun to fight. You know, I love the audio and the music. You know, so we've taken the things that people have loved and we've iterated on them. And then we've taken the things that people haven't expressed a lot of enthusiasm about. You know, it stopped being fun when this happened. Mm-hmm. Or I was having fun until that happened. Mm-hmm. And we've reinvented those things. The way you explore the worlds, the way you acquire your exotics. So that's kind of where we place our bets as developers. Take the things they love, give them more of those things in some new and exciting ways. Take the things they've complained about and break those bones, like Mark Noseworthy said. Yeah. You know?
And Mark will literally break bones.
Yeah.
He's really strong.
Quite literally, yeah.
Guys, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure having you on the show again. Yeah. We're all really tired from E3, but I appreciate you taking the time to come out on Tuesday, the first day that the show floor is open, to talk with us today.
Yeah.
We do have a tradition for our outro. We say, Guardians out and point at the camera. Are you down?
Absolutely.
Deej, yeah. You've done it before. You good?
We say until like next time, and then we'll go.
All right, so here we go. Thank you for joining us, everybody. But until next time, Guardians out.
I didn't freeze frame. I didn't freeze frame. I'm sorry.
All right.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.